What's going on, guys? It's Chris Mead back for another episode of My Biggest Lessons. I got my good friend Michelle Razavi and Nikki Elliott over at LV. What's going on, guys? How are you?
Good to be here.
Good. Thanks so much for coming on, making the time. We met, probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 months ago, a random little Zoom call, but it's been awesome following you guys. I know you know a little bit about the show, but for those listening, up and coming entrepreneurs, just going through life, every day is a roller coaster. Give us some backstory. Like, who are you guys? Why are you on the podcast? What do you guys do?
Yeah. So we met teaching fitness classes at Equinox, actually, up in San Francisco. And at the same time, We're juggling these very demanding corporate jobs. Myself, I was at Sephora Corporate.
And I was at PwC working in consulting, finance and accounting consulting.
Yeah. And it was a very weird, crazy life looking back in terms of we were working these long corporate work hour days and teaching. Nikki was teaching early, like 5:45 in the morning, then working all day. I was teaching right after work. And we very much lived out of our bags, multiple outfit changes, snacks, protein bars. That's how we survived. And we really struggled in our day to day fueling our bodies through these really long active days because everything currently in the market either had a lot of processed sugars, dairy, sugar, alcohols, anything that upset my stomach personally,
I really wanted to have on a routine basis as a snack.
Yeah. And so at Sephora, I was working on clean beauty and bringing products to market in an innovative way. And I noticed that a lot of the women at work had collagen protein on their desks, but they weren't consuming it. And so I noticed this white space in terms of, okay, there's a couple pain points that are happening right here. One, I'm struggling with getting enough protein and having a clean shelf-stable snack. Two, I'm also noticing that a lot of people want collagen, but they're not taking it, finding it in very effective ways. And so to solve my own pain point, I was creating these collagen protein bars to take to the gym, to have at work and sharing with friends, and really stumbled upon this formula that was super clean. It tasted really good because of the way that, you know, it was put together and delivered nourishing protein in a very macronutrient balanced way, leveraging my background in holistic wellness to kind of deliver something that solved a lot of different pain points. And shared it with Nikki, who is also an endurance athlete and lived that exact same lifestyle. And she was able to lend her perspective in terms of
wanting to take collagen as well. Like, loved that, but also it tasted really good. But like, making something in your kitchen isn't always.
So you're whipping them up in your kitchen. You're like, literally, had you had food experience or like, how does that work?
Not that much. I did have one book that my boss gifted me, which is like the art of like cooking. So it taught me a lot about like kind of like the acids and the bases and like balancing ratios out and just being able to spot like, does this have too much salt or needs more salt, but nothing formal. And so, yeah, was just kind of taking one step at a time, not really thinking about starting a business, or it was just kind of like, what happens if I wanted to create my own perfect protein bar? And so I was researching different prototyping companies and bar manufacturers and stumbled upon like a co-manufacturer that produces bars. And so made a call, talked to them, put down a couple $1,000s, just really, again, like taking one little step at a time. And next thing you know, we have like prototypes. I'm sharing with people. People love it. And was at a crossroads in my career. Nikki serendipitously was too, where I was like, I want to go to grad school. I want to do something bigger. I know I can do more, but I don't know what that is. Maybe I'll just get an MBA. And
a great pivot. I don't know what I want to do, but I'm just going back to school. Maybe figure it out. I think we both felt so unfulfilled and untapped in doing a job what we were doing to like put on this earth for to do.
Yeah. Cause we love teaching, love fitness, but we didn't know how to like monetize that for like a career. Obviously we're at like 25, 26 years of age, quarter life crisis time when it's like, you haven't had some work experience. You want to do something fulfilling. You want to have impact. Maybe your bosses aren't giving you those opportunities. So you have to carve it out yourself and it's scary, right? What to do. And so creating this kind of like mini side business project idea, and then just kind of stepped into the deep end and invested my own personal capital. And then Nikki came on very like quickly after, invested her own personal capital. So without any friends and family money, we bootstrapped with our grad school savings, our first production run, and we continued bootstrapping for a year throughout the pandemic. Incredibly hard to do with a protein bar.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
We've launched so many different flavors, a new product line, and are here to tell the tale of running a company in a pandemic.
No one knows what they're doing.
That's crazy. I love it. No, I know that. That's so sweet. So walk me through that. So like for me, when I left for CrossNet, right, I was kind of in the same thing, that quarter life crisis. I was 24 at the time. I was working a sales job in New York, got put up for a promotion twice, got denied both times because I wasn't professional enough. Go figure. And eventually got fired from that job. And at that point, I was like fed up with my boss, barely had any money to my name, but I had this sick idea right for CrossNet, and I knew I had to go all in on it. Do you feel like, when was the point where y'all looked at each other, or especially you, like to start, like, did you have to have like X amount of money in your bank account? Was it, this is a time I'm going full time on it? What was the thoughts there?
We did was actually pretty smart. So I went on full time from the beginning while Nikki was still working a corporate job, because we knew that there had to be someone full time to move the company forward, to take calls, to just be so focused on, you know, building and growing.
Yeah.
But there also needed to be someone like running capital and contributing capital and having that stability, because we didn't have a safety net of friends and family to fall back on.
And but even before that, sacrificing what was going to be our next step of our future of grad school and putting those savings into inventory and create a balance sheet of a company. You know, I think we both, it was almost the courage. I know Michelle inspires me so much in just her courage of pushing things forward, but like, it was kind of like her believing in me to like come on and start a company together. And I think for me, do you need money? Like, I love your idea and I love your product. You know, I think they're willing to put money in to see it come to market, right? I think there's like that point for both of us of just like believing in one another so much that
it made it real.
It made it like we couldn't turn back after kind of putting that purchase order to some degree. But
I think the thing is when you put a lot of skin in the game, it forces you to hustle and you'll figure it out. I knew that if I was half-assed about it, if I was still working, if I was just doing it part-time,
not putting everything that you could into it.
I kind of knew that about myself. I was like, I need to kind of like the net underneath me so that will force me at whatever means necessary to make it work. And so that's what I knew. But I also knew that I needed people around me, I needed resources, I needed people to balance me out. And so the best piece of advice I got from my friend, which was on an exercise mat, she said, get a co-founder.
Yeah, cool.
She made it come to light by saying, don't just pick anyone, pick someone who you trust, pick someone who is opposite of you, who compliments you really well. Mm-hmm. And finally, lonely at the top. So you're going to take this and be successful with it. You do not want to be so successful and alone with no one to celebrate it with. Hit home for me where that was like, yeah, I don't want to be alone. I want to celebrate the success of someone. And so that was really what opened my eyes to finding a co-founder. And immediately when I saw Nikki like hustling on spreadsheets in the locker room, I knew like that's the kind of girl I want on my team. So
I love that. Talk to me. So one thing that was super difficult for me in the beginning, right, was I have two other co-founders and I was actually the first one to step away from my full-time job to go full on CrossNet. Yeah, this is pretty public with my other founders as well. Like, it was difficult for me when my other co-founders had a full-time job and I'm busting my ass 40, 50, 70 hours a week and you're out collecting a paycheck, right? And like, I'll be honest, like that definitely created some resentment and some beef like in the early days. So how do you navigate that? Because a lot of founders are going to be in a similar situation as you guys. Like, you're busting your ass. You just gave up everything for this company. Nikki's still collecting a paycheck. How does that work? How do you manage
yeah,
that?
Yeah, no, I think it was very much, we were very open and had a very transparent conversation from day one of, it's like sweat equity versus capital equity. And because Nikki was contributing capital, that's where I felt like it was okay, because I had contributed to my max and in order for the company to grow, I needed more capital. Mm-hmm. And Nikki was still contributing where she could. It wasn't like she was just like not working at all. She would like jump in. So I think seeing how hard she wanted to work and how devoted and committed she was and contributing in any way possible, I never felt that resentment.
But it's like, it couldn't exist without the other. Like that's mm-hmm. what, like I always say, like Michelle not full-time pushing the company forward would not be where it was today. And yes, while capital was needed because it's just an intensive business that we have needing capital in order to have a product, it really required both.
Yeah, no, makes complete sense. And yeah, things have definitely been better for us once we've kind of established the roles and what you're doing after your full-time job. I mean, it's not, you're not always in a position for everybody to just quit. Some people have their overhead that they need to. For me, I saved up 4 months of my life. I said, I could always go back and get another job. I'm good at what I do. And I took the risk and thankfully I never had to go back yet. Yeah. So you guys were talking pre-show a little bit, like have navigated from a direct-to-consumer brand, which I'm sure has been extremely tough, not only with COVID, but with the iOS kind of shitstorm that everybody's living through. How have you guys navigated to retail? How are you building those connections? Like, are you finding success? Like, what would you give advice? Give some advice on that.
Yeah, I would say the best advice we got was start local and then kind of branch out there.
Go where you can nurture. a lot of boots on the ground work and a lot of grunt work, following up merchandising, mm-hmm. getting the right people, getting the right buyers to get product in their hands to get on the shelf, but then it's just getting off the shelf too.
Yeah. Sometimes people wouldn't like respond to our calls. So we would show up in person and be like, hi. And while it can't, you have to do that tactfully and not piss anyone off, but you know,
of course.
Being there in person, we would be in stores, like giving samples to people, literally on the shelves, literally buying our own product and giving it to people to try to move and get them to try it. We would just like re-merchandise our product because sometimes it'd be on the bottom shelf and we just like move it back up to the top shelf. It's you have to start local to build the brand. And as fitness instructors, we're able to build community.
So I think for us, we both as fitness instructors know the pain point of both instructors and members going into classes hungry or coming out hungry. And so we're like, well, let's really lean into fitness studios and gyms. Like there's not a lot of competition because they're not in the business of selling food, but there is a need to have these there for people to grab. And so like, let's lean into that and not just go chase after grocery standard retail. Let's lean into this kind of fitness world, especially being in LA, there's a lot of studios and a lot of gyms. So like, that's been kind of our strategic angle where we know we can win and really speak to what how our product's different is in the fitness space.
Yeah. I'd like to add one thing in terms of like getting into retail. What really helped were having this, I used to work in sales, this like sales flow process of like find the right decision maker. And then from there you like send them samples. And then from there you have like a 2-week check-in cadence and then they don't respond. You keep following up every like week or two and just having that persistence is key and being able to follow up with those emails with value. So in each follow-up email, I'd be like, hey, our customer retention rate is higher than industry average, or hey, we just got featured in this press mention. Hey, here's a screenshot of a customer who sent us an Instagram DM saying they wanted to see us in your store. Follow up, it wasn't just, hey, did you see my last email saying, hey, following up, wanted to share this piece of value with you. This is why we're going to be great in your store. So that it made sense why I was following up and not being that annoying squeaky wheel.
And the press helps too. I think you could share some exciting press mentions. Then you start to hear from people as well. Share your success and the traction, as you mentioned, you know, because that really does, it sets you apart when they're looking at a bunch of different products.
100%. It's so crazy how like, I only had like 2 years of technical sales experience, but just learning for as like an SDR, like every touch point has to have value. Like you can't just say, yo, what's up? You missed my email. Like you need to keep contributing that. So like, what about from sales collateral? Would you guys have, I have this conversation, a lot of brands are going to retail, right? Direct to consumer is harder than ever. What kind of collateral do you have on your end or what kind of collateral do you want to have made? I mean, I'll start this. Literally 25 minutes ago, we were just on a call. We were on QVC last weekend. So we need to create like we need to create like a one sheeter that like highlights the QVC success, the Good Morning success. I have a beautiful retail guide, but it doesn't have any of our press mentions on it. And like, that's kind of stupid. Like I'm trying to convince somebody to give me money, but I'm not putting like our accolades on that. So what kind of stuff do you guys have? And what kind of stuff do you wish you had?
Yeah, I would say couple things to have in your toolbox are sell sheets. Obviously, it depends on your industry, but for food and bev, it's a pretty template standardized idea. You can look on Pinterest as well for examples. And that just basically shows your product line, the ingredients, nutrition fact panel, just everything a buyer would need to know to make a decision, right? So it's a one pager, very visually stunning.
On that one pager, like show the product itself, not just the packaging. People love to see what it looks like and what they're going to be eating.
And what it looks like on shelf too.
And what it looks like on shelf, for sure.
Yep. So that's key. We also have landing pages as well that shows visually graphics that show the product and provide like a one pager digitally so we can hyperlink it to them. And we can track with MailTrack if they clicked into that. So that's another trick I would set up.
That's cool.
We have email templates already saved into our Gmail. So in Gmail, you can save emails that you send to retailers and you can modify like this is like what I do a cold outbound, this is like a follow-up email, this is kind of just applying sales tactics of having pre-written emails and you just insert the names, save yourself time. And then I would just also make sure that when you're doing store visits you have product on you, you have a printed out sell sheet, business cards, things like that. If you are doing that, and that is really helpful. Same with trade shows, you want to have physical things as well. But yeah, I would say like those are kind of like the main tools for following up and doing it.
I love that. Has there been any accounts that have come through that you're like, damn, I didn't expect them to be buying these bars? Like for us, Uline, right? Like Uline was a really cool one about CrossNet. And I was like, I was like, I would never expect them to buy a CrossNet. Like any accounts like that for you guys?
There was this one pharmacy in like Orange County that randomly reached out. He saw us in another retailer in Newport. and reached out and was like, do you do wholesale? And I looked up his website and I was like, this is a pharmacy. But yeah, I would say probably that was like kind of adjacent, because I guess people would want snacks at a pharmacy, but it wasn't intuitive.
Better for you. Like, yeah, great ingredients.
Yeah, that was probably
makes sense.
Yeah, I think when people like just want us in like their office events, you know, just retreats, like we get companies reaching out like, hey, we're going to a company retreat. This is such a great untapped opportunity for us to be thinking about, because it's, you don't have to get it the way of the customer buying it, because the company is just giving them away. So like anything where you can kind of have that set up is so great. And there's, as companies are swinging back, retreats and offsites and all hands meetings and swag bags of any kind, employee gifting, like such a fun market to kind of get yourself into.
100%. Talk to me about distribution, right? So like for me in the early days, I never wanted to sell to a distributor because they'd be taking margin off of my hard work. In food and bev, like, I mean, rumor has it, like you kind of have to work with distributors to get into those big stores. Like, are you guys working with them? How's that work? And like, what are the big accounts that you guys are trying to get into this year?
Great question. I would say good advice that we got is avoid them as long as you can, and avoid the big ones that really
are not helpful to small businesses
as long as you can. So we've been able to stay away from the really big ones. We're in Erewhon, so they require a distributor. Obviously, don't go until you have that confirmed retailer and they say, this is our distributor of choice. And then you would onboard with them. That's what we did. And I think that works best for seamless transition. But obviously, as you're trying to scale and grow and get these bigger purchase orders, that is the game for food and bev, is to work with distributors.
And we've been told, like, don't go in with the mindset thinking they're going to lie to fulfill direct. You're not going to be that one unicorn that they're like, yeah, sure, you can just send it over. Like, you got to play the game.
That's so annoying. So you have to go to Erewhon, get the PO, do all the hard work, and then distributor just takes a cut and like helps get it on the shelf.
And sometimes it's just like inventory sitting in a warehouse on consignment. Like, distributors have different models and there's pros and cons to all of it. But sometimes it's like really tough as a small business to just have inventory, have sales behind, just sit somewhere else.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But sometimes you just like, we've even done consignment deals in the past and they turn around and they'll cut a big PO 3 weeks later because you had proof of concept in it and it sold through. Yeah. So you do got to take chances. Obviously, the paying customer, at least in my mind, the paying customer always comes first before the non-paying customer. Mm-hmm. Having that excess inventory is super important.
It's a great point. You said to build trust. We've done that with some retailers of like, hey, let's prove to you how fast we can move. Because they're not just going to take your word for it. Like, put your money where your mouth is and like give them that product to sell through and see how fast you do it.
Exactly. 100%. And we've had tough lessons. Like, I'm sure you guys are learning too. Not every store is going to be perfect for you. In the beginning, when I created CrossNet, like I was like, dude, if you sell anything, sell our game. Like, I'll take anybody who's going to give us money. But eventually that became bad look. We had product just sitting there, not moving, and we were oversaturated. And it makes a lot more sense to like grow really deep with one or two stores than have a bunch of shitty stores that just like aren't supporting your company. And I'm sure you guys are finding that already happen with like the gyms and all that.
100%. And especially as a food company, we have to worry about shelf life. So if something's sitting on the shelf for too long, that's an even worse experience for the consumer, for the retailer. So we have to be certain that wherever we go, we sell and we sell quick.
Sponsor a fitness class near a retailer or an event that you know is happening. Drive traffic and let people know that where they can find you. So that way you can support that retailer as well. And then it only helps your velocity too.
100%. So my favorite part of the show, biggest lessons. I got to hear some fuck up, some mistakes. There's got to be tons, especially in the food and bev industry, especially when starting making the bar from your home. Like, give me some horror stories, things that you wish, you looking back, you're like, damn, why did we ever do this?
I mean, how long do you have? Like, there's so many stories of like me stupidly thinking that an LTL could just drop off inventory.
Yeah, well, they had our pallet delivered to our front door in San Francisco. I'm like, and there's like, I'm taking this to a warehouse. We're like, we don't have a warehouse. Like, we have our apartments. And so like, that was a good lesson of just how large orders work in terms of the delivery. It's not just going to be like a nice man outside with a pretty box.
That's crazy.
We still make so many mistakes. Like in retail, for instance, we have these like stand-up pouches that are great for direct-to-consumer, right? They ship light.
Yep.
Jinx. They are beautiful. They're stunning. They're different than the box. But in retail, we have the stupid expectation of like, hey, retail merchandiser, we want you to open up this pouch in your busy day, take out bars and merchandise into this carton. Don't throw away the carton. We're too cheap to give you more cartons. So just keep reusing the same carton. And we want you to call us right away when you're running low so we can put it in order. It was like, who do we think we are, like, expecting?
And then I think all of their staff knows all about Alavi doing this.
Like, the audacity that we had to, like, expect. And now we're, like, we're just going to pre-pack them in cartons, send them out, make it easy for everyone. But we're trying to save packaging and trying to, like, adapt a DTC model to retail. And that was a growing pain for us. We're, like, one channel has one set of packaging, and another channel will probably have another set of packaging and a whole different rule set. And we needed to learn that the hard way with the issues in retail.
No, makes complete sense. Are you guys trending more towards a direct-to-consumer company or more retailer, or trying to find that 50-50 balance?
At this stage, we love the balance, but we are still going to, like, always lean into DTC where we can build community and really spread brand awareness as much as we can. And then strategically get into the retailers where we can then drive our community. I think there will be a place where maybe the ratio shifts more to retail down the line. But, like, right now, we will continue to lean into DTC. But striking the balance is important to us as well.
Yeah. I mean...
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say, besides, like, free shipping, like, what's the motivation, right? As somebody, like, my fiance, on the other hand, she'll swipe the credit card all day and buy cool stuff on Instagram. But, like, for me, as somebody who's super, like, I could get it at Trader Joe's, right? Like, why would I buy it on direct to consumer? Like, how are you building that motivation?
Yeah, I would say.
Because we struggle.
Totally. I think there's a little bit of, like, impulse buying, a little bit of, like, curiosity that, like, brings people to our products. I think the fact that you can't get us in most retailers is what drives people, obviously. In addition to that, we do provide the best price online, so that'll incentivize people. Okay. And then on top of that, we build value. So being a part of, like, the community, we have, like, text message workout playlists that we send out to our customers. We send workouts to them too. And I think that's what people really see us as, more of, like, this lifestyle brand of, oh, they also sell snacks, but it's also this brand that we can follow along, these two crazy girls who are hustling in their business. So anyone who wants to kind of get a kind of glimpse into startup life or what it's like being an entrepreneur, they can, like, tune in for that, but they can also see the behind the scenes of, you know, what goes into formulating. So it's very much like brand storytelling, and it's entertainment a little bit, but also empowerment in terms of helping inspire people to be healthier and more active, and using our nutrition fuel snacks to enable that. So I think that's really what brings people to our brand and our website, is just to be a part of that story and build alongside us.
Yeah, offer down subscription to kind of help continue to build, like, this community that, like, really embeds people into the brand. Those are, we call them our VIPs. Like, we're sending them first messages and launches, and they're kind of continuously purchasing from us and seeing the evolution of the company, which is cool.
I love that. I think you guys know my boys over at Tenzo Tea. They do an incredible job with the subscriptions. And I mean, I archive a lot of emails really quickly, but they always send me recipes, and I'm a matcha, like, snob. So, like, any cool recipe I get, like, I bookmark, I screenshot, send it to wifey, and she's making me stuff. So, like, it's cool to see that. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Congrats on all this success. Tell everybody where they can go pick up a bar if they want to support the DTC hustle.
Yeah, go straight to our website, elavi.co. That's the best place to purchase them. You can also purchase on Amazon Prime. All of our products are on there, selling very quickly. And then if you're in any of our retailers on our website, you can just go and look for store locator and see if there's anything nearby you. But we appreciate if you come purchase directly from us so we can know who you are and
write you a handwritten note,
remarket to you, and you get access to all the latest and greatest. It's always good to support that way.
I love it. Michelle, Nikki, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.